All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of Persuasion by the Pint. I'm Jonathan Taylor, along with
Sean McCool.
Sean, we're on a new platform, so it's a little different. Everything looks different. You look different.
I look different. I don't have all my books in the background. Like
that's right.
Everything seems squished, at least on our view.
Yeah.
There's two views I've got. One of them is kind of the wider view, but the other one's, so I don't know what the people are seeing.
Yeah.
But it doesn't sound any different. So I guess that's good for a podcast.
So we've gone from Zoom, which we have been using for a podcast, to StreamYard, just to give us multiple channels at one time to live stream to. So we had been going to Zoom allows you to only go one platform at a time when you're live streaming. So we decided to give StreamYard a try because you'd mentioned you guys are using that over at capitalism.com. Yep. And so we're testing this out to put on our Twitter page and also the YouTube. And then maybe next week we'll even try it on the Facebook page too and see what that looks like. So it's kind of a dry run.
What about TikTok, man? Are we going to get on TikTok?
It'd be cool. I don't think it gives TikTok as an option. So
yeah, it's too new. I don't know if TikTok can do streaming at all, actually. But
yeah,
plus we'd have to dance if we're going to be on that.
That's right. That's right.
I'm not going to be dancing. Are your kids on TikTok?
I think my oldest is for sure. Yeah.
Well, that makes sense because all the cute girls are on TikTok.
Yep. Although he has proclaimed as of last week that he is done with social media. I think that'll last all of about a week.
Yeah. That's interesting. I wonder. Yeah, that's
it's fickle. It's a fickle teenage time where they're done with something and it'll last probably about 3 or 4 days and he'll be back. So,
yeah. So that's his system one brain probably kicking in.
Exactly. A lot of system one going on.
That's the simplest answer. I'm just going to give it all up, despite any other rational thinking about it. So,
exactly.
Which is what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to be diving back into. We've been a couple episodes away now from Thinking Fast and Slow.
Yep.
And so we'll be diving back into that, finishing that up today. But before we do that, we've got some beverages to talk about.
Yeah. We'll have to hold them up closer, but with this new platform, we got to hold the beer up.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I'm really like in the screen right now.
So if I hold my beer up like I normally do, you can't see it. I've literally got to get it right there. There we go.
In front of your face, which is bad TV. Yeah, you got to almost move out of the way.
All right.
So what do you got? That looked interesting. Show me that can again.
So on this episode, see, look at this. I don't even know where to hold it. Okay, here we go.
And, and then you try to move the opposite. Everything's backwards, like doing in the mirror.
So this is
a mad tree,
local blend, CBUS. I don't even know what that means. But I pull up their website.
At first I thought it was CBD beer. CBD. I was like, I'll be chilling out on this one.
All right. So this is a porter. It's a coffee porter.
All right.
6% ABV, only 19 IBUs. So I nailed it this time, after there that 45 on the last one. Let's see, 6% IBU. Local blend porter was built as a platform to let coffee shine. So we're talking, you know, coffee is a big part of this. The base beer brings light chocolate notes, very subtle roast, and enough sweetness from the lactose to balance everything out. After fermentation is complete, we split the batch into four smaller batches, and this ensures a base beer is 100% the same, and the only difference is the coffee used. So they've got like four blends that use different coffee. The beer's the same. Everything's the same except for the coffee. So this is they're Mad Tree Brewing. I think we've had these guys on before. This is out of Cincinnati, and so it's up in the Cincinnati area. So so we'll see.
All right. I like it. All right, so let me go back. I'm going to find mine because there's not much information online about this one. So, oh, man, this is – can't figure out which way to move. This is – that's tough.
Yeah, this is – this will take some getting used to.
So this is an Austin brew. So this is Bat Country. Bat Country Cold Brew Coffee Stout. Mm-hmm. And it's got a picture of the Congress Bridge downtown where all the bats live.
Oh, wow.
And it's from Fourth Tap Brewing Co-op here in town.
Interesting.
And it's not a
crazy
much.
Looking can.
Yeah, it's like pastels, but, you know, it's a coffee stout, cold brew. All it says on here, it doesn't actually give ABV. It just says body is like right in the middle of light and full. Hoppiness is on the easy side. And balance is just a little bit to the left of sweet and bitter. So mostly sweet, I guess. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's no ABV. I guess that's not required because I know from time to time we have cans and you can't find it. And they, even if I go to their site, there's a picture of the can, but there's really no information.
Oh, okay. So,
it looks like this is actually a tap room, and it says they brew 30 barrels at a time. So
where are these, where are they out of again?
Right here in Austin.
Oh, okay.
So that's an actually downtown right Austin there. Type thing. Mm-hmm. So, all right. So yeah, let me pour this one up.
I'm going to hold mine up to the camera after I've poured it. Nice dark.
After you figure out where it is.
It's a nice dark porter.
Yeah. So this is a stout. Yours is a coffee porter. Mine's a coffee stout. Mm-hmm. So be interested to see the difference. All right. Are you ready?
Yep. Here we go.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Whew.
Ooh, man.
I'm not a fan of this right now.
Okay.
I don't know if it's got bat dung in it or something, but
be careful about those bats, you know, Corona.
Yeah,
and
exactly. Yeah, it's got like, that's a little more bitter than I would have expected considering where their little chart is on the can. Like right. The can shows like right there in the middle. Can't get it. There we are. But that's got a pretty bitter first taste.
Mm, how about the second one?
About the same. And it doesn't have, like, when I think coffee stout, I want the coffee flavor to come through. Like, right. If I'm going to pick up a coffee stout, mm-hmm. give me a shot of coffee in it.
Yeah.
Then I don't taste any coffee in this. So that's a little disappointing because I bought a 6-pack. Crap.
Mm. Yeah, there you go. You got a giveaway.
I got a giveaway, yeah. So,
well, this one's not, you know, for a coffee porter, this is my third sip. The coffee is weak. I thought the coffee flavor would be a little stronger. It's weak. It's not hoppy at all, but the coffee flavor is not strong at all. So,
yeah, same here. Hmm. Interesting. It almost tastes like, you know, when you have like old coffee that's been sitting around a little while, it kind of loses the coffee flavor and just gets the bitterness. That's kind of what this is. So, but I don't even really, like, if you didn't tell me it was coffee, I wouldn't know there was coffee in it.
Okay.
And I I'm going to give this a 2.
Wow.
Yeah. Pretty
that's
harsh.
But that's pretty, yeah, that's one of your lowest ratings.
Yeah. I'm disappointed. I'm going to have to go pull out some more. Should have got 2 of the engine oils and only one of the bat countries.
I'm going to give this a 2.5. Okay. I'll go a little higher, but again, nothing that impresses me.
Not a rebuy for sure. Huh?
No. And this was a single, so I don't have to worry about that.
Man, so. You lucked out. Lucked out. All right. Let's get into the old book for today.
All right.
I've got my notes from read it dot for me or something. Read it for dot me, I guess is what it is.
Yes.
Not a sponsor, but a cool service. Nonetheless, if you've not heard of it, it's read it for dot me. Pretty cool summary service, that does like a printed and a audio recording. So yeah, that's pretty cool.
So is that for most books out there that you can go and pull up just about any book?
Most business books are on there, at least the big ones.
Yeah. And for a book like, dang it, for a book this thick, that's a great, You know, this is, that would be a great tool for that, because I'm telling you, this is, and this is difficult. This is not like skim reading. This is textbook type reading. And it's really good. It's not a lot of fluff either, but there's a lot of research that goes into this, that you'll spend some time in. So I'd be interested in getting the summary for sure.
Yep, for sure. I remember listening to that on audio and it was a good audio. I think I did it on a road trip. So, it was pretty good. I hit the big ideas, but then I had to go back and get the notes to talk about on the show. So I'm going to let you lead depending on where, because I can't tell where I am in the book with a, when the book is 5,000 pages and the summary is 5 pages, I have no idea where in the book I am. So I'll let you lead and I'll add in from there.
So I'm going to, there's two specific chapters and we're going to wrap this book up today anyway. But there are two that stood out to me the most, which, was, the one on anchors. I think it's chapter 11 on anchoring. And we've talked about anchors in the past, but how important that is in, anchoring your message or anchoring what it is in marketing. And usually we, when we talk about anchors, we talk about using numbers to anchor people. There's different ways you can anchor your message as a speaker. You can use stories and things like that. But specifically in this chapter, we talk about using numbers and you see it happen a whole lot. So, you know, if I ask you, Sean, would you be willing to pay, you know, for this, this Jeep Wrangler, would you be real or Jeep Renegade, Jeep Wrangler? Let's say Jeep Wrangler. Would you be willing to pay, you know, $40,000 or $50,000? You know, so I throw out a number, and I give you a picture and I throw out a number. And then from that point on, what I've done is anchored that number in your mind, for any future negotiations. So I want to start with a high number typically, and then kind of work my way into the process, because I've already started you. I've already kind of primed you at a certain number that I want us to be at. Where we go from there is going to be, it's either going to be more or less than 50,000, right? If I use the number 50,000 from that point on, we're going to go either north or south, but we're not going to go very far from that number, right? We're going to go more,
and probably won't go above it.
Right.
But certainly we'll go, stick to it pretty close compared to if you had said 40 or 30 or anything else.
Sure.
Right. Cause most people aren't going to offer more, but yeah, that first number, is pretty important, but it's not just numbers.
Yeah, no. It's not just numbers. It's anything. But here's the thing that I found the most interesting out of this chapter. Cause we've talked about anchors in the past and how this is used. The ironic thing that this chapter talks about is the study and the research that goes into the fact that you can use you can use numbers that, so they did studies on numbers that were reasonably accurate, but then they used, they would use numbers that didn't make sense, you know, that had no relation, and those still work. So we're always being primed by a number, regardless of if it makes sense or not.
Let's talk about that for a second, because, you know, you can really use that to your advantage in negotiations and, you know, your pitches, and you can do it so casually. I'm glad you brought this up, because this can be really fun to test out. and the science is there, like, you know, the report, all the research is there. Mm-hmm. So let's say I knew I was going to try to sell you, you know, the Jeep for, you know, $40,000, right?
Right.
And that was my number that I had to have, my low number. So I'll probably start you at maybe 45 or 50. You know, let's say it's decked out, Rubicon, the whole bit, right? So what I could do is, you know, in the rapport phase, like before we really get down to negotiating, I could say something like, "Hey, Jonathan, did you see the game last week at Neyland Stadium? They said it was a sellout, 108,000 people.
Right.
108,000. Can you believe that?
Yeah.
Right. So now I've got this number that's primed and there's nothing to do with it. But the research shows if you can get a big number out, people are just naturally going to gravitate towards a higher number.
Sure.
right? So now when I open negotiations, as long as I don't throw out a different number that's tied directly to the Jeep, you know, I would open up and I would say, hey, so, you know, tell me what were you thinking as far as an offer? Mm-hmm. Right. So now you're going to skew towards that 100,000 number.
Right.
And you don't even know what's happening.
And I might argue with you. I'm like, yeah, there's not 108,000. I would say there's probably like 95, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah. Because if I don't agree with you at all, I'm not going to stray too far from that number though, that you've already planted in my mind.
Yeah. So then when you throw out a quote for the Jeep to buy it, you're still going to be artificially higher than what you would have been had you come in. I think I mentioned in another episode, when I sold timeshare, somebody did that. And as soon as they picked the person up, they would throw out this huge, just crazy number. So anything else the rest of the day, it seemed like a lower number.
Sure.
Yeah. It's crazy. And like, it sounds absurd when we talk about it in this context and you're like, that would never work. That's not how people work. Right. They're smarter than that. But the research shows that that's the way your brain works.
Sure.
And you know, unless you're just soup, I don't even know if you're aware of it, I don't think you could shortcut it.
No, it's very difficult.
I mean, unless you came with something pre-written, you know, and you were going to stick to your guns and everything else, like chances are you're not going to be able to overcome that system one response to anchoring.
And we see it happen time and time again online where we buy coaching, we buy, courses, information courses, whatever, you know, you get to the landing page. And so we're saying, you know, this is a value. So we may get the especially during times like this, we may get a special price. Okay.
Yeah.
And so we see that the price is normally this much or it's worth this much, but we're getting a deal.
Total value of $34,713. Yours
for 19.
Not 5,000. Right. Not 3,000, not 2,000, not even 1,000. Mm-hmm. Not even half that. Mm-hmm. Just $97. And you're like, holy crap, what a deal.
Right. Because the first numbers primed us to think, wow, it's got to be worth it.
And I know most people hate doing that, as marketers and everything else. But the fact is it works. And the other fact is they're all made up numbers anyway.
Sure.
Like the 90, even if you ended at 97, it's a made up number.
Yeah.
I mean, is it worth that? I don't know.
Yeah.
It depends on what the person's going to do with it, really.
Right.
And they could do that for a dollar or they could do that for $30,000. Like I could easily make an argument, especially in coaching. There's a correlation between what people pay and how much action they take.
Sure.
Not always, but more often than not. Mm-hmm. So I could actually say, you know, it is worth more if I charge more because they'll do the work. But on information products, it's just a made up number. I mean, everybody's using the same.
Sure.
5 or 10 numbers, but the fact is it's still made up.
Yeah.
So, and it's just air. I mean, we're buying ones and zeros. Like it's, yeah. So,
it was interesting. Brandon Bouchard, obviously every marketer right now is going online right now because he can't have, you know, I've been to a lot of his events in the past. Great events, but you can't do that right now. I mean, in the middle of a pandemic. So everybody's going online.
Virtual events.
Yep, virtual events. And they're offering these special deals. And I've noticed this, you know, you'll probably see them in your Facebook feeds and your email. But special deal, you know, I'm offering to my audience right now. And it's normally, you know, this price. But because we're in the middle of a pandemic... And, I know that things are tough right now. Everybody's experiencing problems. This is a chance. I want to offer this to my audience right now at this special price. And obviously it's they've already primed us within this message of the normal, what the normal value is on this, what you're normally getting. And at this time you can get it virtually, you know, through the conferencing platform, through the virtual events at this special price. So It works.
Yeah. And if you're, yeah. And if you were going to pitch that, you know, you could say things like, you know, normally this would cost you, you know, $1,500 for the ticket. It would cost you $500 for the airfare. It cost you $250 a night for the hotel plus meals. Like you could really, and those would be very real numbers if it was a live event, right?
Yep.
And you could stack that up and say, we're doing the whole thing online, you know, no wasted time traveling
for just
$497.
Yep.
And it, you know, it would probably do really well.
Yep.
All right. So that's anchoring.
Yeah. So the other thing, here's my other big one is, two big chapters are the anchoring and then the availability. So there's two sections on, there's one on the science of availability. And then the one that I really got interested in was the availability, motion, and risk, which I encourage everyone to go through. It's like, I think it's like chapter 13. But as I was going through this chapter, you know, I started thinking about the times that we're in and the way availability is used. So availability has to do with the information that we're given, right? And so a lot of that is generated through media that we read, whether it's social media, whether it's traditional media, but it's used against us. And so it makes me think about how this is always, this is constantly being used against us on a regular basis. So you think about, here's an example. So I'm looking at some research findings. And so I've got some bullets here and I'm going to read these out. Strokes cause almost twice as many deaths as all accidents combined, but 80% of respondents in a study judged accidental death to be more likely. Here's another one. Tornadoes were seen as more frequent killers than asthma, although the latter causes 20 times more deaths.
Interesting.
Death by lightning was judged less likely than death by botulism, even though it is 52 times more frequent. death by disease is 18 times more likely as accidental death, but the two were judged about equally likely. And then lastly, deaths by accidents were judged to be 300 times more likely than deaths by diabetes, but the true ratio is 1-4. In other words, people die of diabetes a whole lot more than they do by accidents. But diabetes, we don't see a lot in the media, do we?
No. See, we see a lot about, well, that's just commercials though. We see about managing it, but we don't see people dying from it.
That's right. So that, it doesn't garner a lot of the headlines, you know, that's not exciting. So
you're not going to lead the 6 o'clock news with man in Austin dies of diabetes today. You just didn't have, but if it's a, if it's a 3-car pileup in an intersection, you know, that'll be leading story. Or if it's, you know, gunshot victim, that's much more dramatic. That's going to lead the story. And that's what we hear.
Yeah.
So it's not, you said that's availability. So the availability of the information. So the more information, that type of information is available, the more likely we are to believe that it takes some type of priority.
We give it more credence than anything else. So, and I kind of started thinking about, okay, here's the times that we live in where we have 24/7, everyone's talking about, you know, COVID-19 coronavirus. And so I was thinking about this as I was going through this chapter, like when I hear about deaths and you mentioned anybody that's died recently over the age of 60, the first thing that comes to my mind, and without even thinking about it, you know, it's just a reaction subconsciously. I'm automatically thinking, did they die of coronavirus? Did they die of COVID-19? Because that's all I've heard about. That's all that's been in the media. So it follows in line with this, the availability of information. You start thinking that, regardless of what they died, they could have died of cancer. They could have died of heart disease, but automatically the first thing that comes to mind is, were they a victim of corona? You know, especially given the age.
And even if you're like even if you don't believe that they are a victim of corona, you would probably say something like, oh, they're probably going to blame this on Corona.
Right? Sure.
Either way, it's still top of mind that it's Corona.
Yeah.
You know, so that just shows like it's been in the news so much. And I was actually just looking up, I've got this cool chart that has like 168 different cognitive biases on it. Mm-hmm. Biases.
Yep.
And I was trying to figure out which one this is. But yeah, and there it is. It's right at the top of, in the too much information category, it mm-hmm. says availability heuristic is one of the main biases.
Oh, so, yeah. Yep.
So whatever information is most available, we give more weight and gravity to.
Sure. And that goes yep. back to what have we talked about over a couple of weeks ago, system one, system two.
Yep.
System one loves the availability. I mean, that's what we gravitate. It's like, you know, so easy to jump to. And so we naturally, and that's our system one. When I hear somebody say, or when I see a report of such and such singer or actor or whoever that's in their 60s or above, system one says that guy died of Corona, you know?
Right. Well, and let's apply this down to marketing and persuasion. So how can you use this, you know, for mm-hmm. your business?
Right.
This is really what targeting ads, your retargeting ads are great for.
Right.
Right. Cause you're going to say the same message over and over to people, and that information becomes super available because you're following them on Google and mm-hmm. on Facebook and on Instagram.
Yeah.
And it begins to become familiar.
Sure.
You know, this is an easier way to do whatever you do, you know, for your prospect. The more you show that, the more you show up in their feeds, show up mm-hmm. in different places, then the more believable it comes.
Right.
The more top of mind it becomes.
Right.
And this is where, big brand advertising really knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
And that's why you see this constant competition, you know, like between the insurance companies, Allstate, and Farmers, and mm-hmm. Progressive, because they're all trying to be the most available.
Yeah.
You know, as far as discounts or whatever is concerned.
Sure.
So they're all kind of fighting for that availability spot mm-hmm. in your brain.
Yep.
And, you know, it's hard in that world, but in a smaller niche, you know, you can own that spot in people's brains just by doing a really good retargeting campaign.
Sure.
And you know, those are fairly cheap compared to like just the raw cost of advertising. Like if you're trying to get a new lead, mm-hmm. retargeting is pretty cheap.
Yeah.
Retargeting everybody that comes to your website, retargeting people who sign up for your emails or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, you can do that pretty inexpensively. In fact, right. we should have Ben come on pretty soon.
We need to absolutely. That'd be fantastic.
And talk about, you know, different types of ads and retargeting and like the difference between like an upfront lead and a retargeting lead. Cause it's pretty dramatic. The difference between the cost of retargeting mm-hmm. and because it's such a smaller number, you're not trying to advertise to everybody. You're trying to advertise to people who have already shown interest.
Right.
And take advantage of that availability bias
mm-hmm.
that they have.
Yeah. That makes total sense. Spend your dollars on people that have been exposed mm-hmm. and just expose them even more.
And the other thing is like, you could tap into what that's, you know, Ben Settle, I think, talks about this a lot, like tapping into current events, tapping sure. into pop mm-hmm. culture, because they're doing all the heavy lifting for you of creating that availability. Mm-hmm. So if you can tap into that, then your message automatically, goes into system one, is familiar, available, believable, all that stuff. You just kind of hitch your wagon to that.
Yeah. Well, I've seen it happen in the industry that I'm in where so many companies are kind of, you know, you can use the social, you know, being socially conscious where they're, you know, taking up a cause or all, you know, all of this during times like this. I mean, let's be real. It's an opportunity. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's all marketing. And, you know, we're not naive enough to know that this is in the market. This is part of their marketing, is to get on board with what people are already believing, because the media, again, the availability, the media has already fed us so much information on this. So why not ride? I mean, you get on board, you know, get on board this train, ride it, you know. So I see a lot of companies in my industry, whether it's additive manufacturing or 3D companies out there who are printing, you know, parts for all sorts of things, whether it's ventilators, masks, you name it. But they're using, I mean, they're using the media. The media is doing a lot of their bidding for them in terms of promoting what's going on. And so they just kind of latch on to that and use that as free publicity, so to speak. So,
yeah, it's good. I mean, you know, that's, you know, Ford did that. They were like, you know, part of it was they wanted to stay in business and they wanted to provide jobs. But part of it is, hey, this is pretty good PR. If we start making ventilators,
right,
you know, and we can get some government money and all the other stuff that goes with it. Yep. You know, so some people would be like, well, is that, that's kind of unethical. You're taking advantage of people. Mm-hmm. I would say that's only true to the extent that your product is good or bad.
Right.
If you have a solid product, then you owe it to your customers to tap into whatever is top of mind for them.
Sure. If you're capable of delivering, I think there's nothing unethical there.
Right.
The problem is there's a lot of companies out there that they don't have capability. They're just trying to get a government, you know, they're just trying to win a government contract and get the, you know, $1 million plus contract. And then they don't have the capability of doing it. That's where they get exposed.
Yeah. But you know, if you want to talk about quarantine or Corona or whatever the current trend is, you know, next month or the month after, I think it's a great way to tap into people's, you know, what's going on in their life. You know, it's been said for years, you want to enter the conversation going on in people's minds.
Yes.
Well, the conversation going on is whatever, unfortunately, in a lot of cases, it's whatever the media and pop culture is pushing.
Right.
Because that's a machine that's much bigger than any company out there.
Yep.
So if you can, you can ride that, you can use it however you want. You can use it for good or you can use it for bad. And but if you have a solid product, there's always a tie-in.
Yeah.
And you could make it so that your product is, and I think you should use every type of tactic and technique like that you can. Because skepticism is so high that it almost levels the playing field to use some of these psychology things that we talk about. Because people are overly skeptic and for, you know, in some cases, good reason. But if you, again, it all goes back to you. Do you have a solid product or service?
Sure.
And do you care about your end users?
Yeah.
Now, if you're just out for a money grab, you know, then that's on you and you'll probably end up with customer service issues. But if you've got a good product or service, then tap into those conversations that are going on and learn how to use them. Because if you don't, somebody else is going to, and your competitor is going to, and they may not be as good at what they do as you are.
Exactly.
So.
All right.
What else you got?
Well, that's all I've got for this book. Like I said, I still don't know where to hold that up. Okay. There we go.
Backwards. Yeah. It's like the camera's going the opposite direction.
Fantastic.
In front of your face.
Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, but it's a great book. This book's like 9 years old, but it's definitely worth picking up and going through because it there's so much from a understanding of persuasion and the psychology behind it that you'll gain from it.
Yeah, if you really like human nature and things like that and kind of really understand psychology, sociology, it's a great
book. It's like a Cialdini. It's like an influence, the psychology of persuasion influence. You know, if that's on your shelf, you should definitely pick this up. There's a lot of good takeaways. Is there anything else that you wanted to?
Let me see. Let me just flip through the notes. I think we've covered so, you know, just a couple things I had underlined, just one-liners here.
Is there anything that you have from, there's a section on illusions of validity. which I didn't spend a ton of time on. I got through most everything, but I think that's one of the chapters, Illusions of Validity. That just sounds intriguing to me, but.
Yeah, that does sound. So I'll read a couple of things I had highlighted. Mm-hmm. So for instance, under biases, which mm-hmm. we were just kind of talking about, mm-hmm. This one I actually wrote in the margin. I wrote, this is good to know about like refunds and retention rates and things like that. Coherence makes us feel good, and therefore it is important to remain confident in our decisions. So if you have a product or service, especially a continuity type product or service, the sale is just the sale.
Sure.
You have to constantly remind people of why they bought and encourage them that their original decision was a good decision. Mm-hmm. I remember when I worked at Stansberry, one of the things that we had on like the editorial sheet was Porter had two things that he said you have to do all the, not for the copywriters, but for the editors. Mm-hmm. Every month they had to say, they basically had to say two statements. Number one was what we're doing is working. And they had to give some type of proof that what we were doing was working.
Right.
Right. Even if it was cutting our losses. Right. And the other thing was teasing one thing that was coming up next month that they just couldn't miss.
Oh, okay.
So there was, you know, because people have to constantly be reminded that mm-hmm. they've made a good decision, because there's always going to be some doubt. There's always competition trying to get that customer from you.
Sure.
So you have to constantly be thinking about keeping that, the decision to buy from you coherent in their mind over time.
Right.
And it doesn't have to be a continuity program. It could be, you know, it could just be doing business with you over time.
Right.
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 So however that shows up. Mm-hmm. Another thing is, let's see, when making decisions, the use of formulas is always better than relying on intuition. I know I love to like rely on intuition, yeah. but if I had a checklist or a formula, it would be better. Mm-hmm. You know, even for copy, for it's why airline pilots have been flying for 30 years. They still go through their checklist book
sure.
for every flight.
Yeah.
Because you can't afford to miss one thing,
right.
you know, so they have to go through their checklist and mm-hmm. go through everything. So anything important in your life, you should probably have a checklist for, or some type of formula for, to make decisions.
Sure.
You know, even if it's buying a car or buying a house, like ideally you'd want to have a formula that you could use, because your intuition will probably lead you astray. Another thing was, people want to know the outcome and avoid the risk. That's something that Josh mentioned on our last show.
Yep.
Is that people don't do well with risk. They don't have, they're not good at like judging risk, mm-hmm. especially on a big picture,
right.
Or even on an individual picture. We're just not very good at judging risk. Mm-hmm. Losses hurt more than gains.
Oh yeah.
And our motives that follow. So this, let's see what this says. This could be why people don't set high achieving goals, because the loss of not hitting that goal is worse than, you know, a smaller success. Let's see. Fear of regret is a motivation behind many decisions
yeah.
that people make.
Well, you see that in the financial. I know your background oh, yeah. in the financial industry.
Yeah.
That's used against us more than anything.
Yeah, that fear of missing out is super powerful. Super powerful. Mm-hmm. You know, don't miss out, you know, don't miss out on the next, you know, Microsoft of China or the next Amazon yeah. or the next Apple, you know, those almost always work.
Sure.
Because people regret missing out on the real Apple, the real Microsoft, whatever. That's like, if you want to make a home run as a copywriter, just like throw some of that stuff in there, and it's almost impossible not to have a pretty good promotion.
It's interesting. I think we need to, I don't know how much you read about Enneagrams. My wife's really big into Enneagram. So there's a certain Enneagram. It's like it's a 1 through 9.
Right.
But there is a certain Enneagram number that their personality is always, they're fearful of missing out on something.
Yeah.
You know, so they're like, they're the perfect, you know, person to market to in terms of that, you know. So yeah. I think it would be interesting. We should it'd be cool to maybe have an expert on that to come on, because there's like, there's ones like 1, 2, 3, 4. It goes all the way up to 9.
Yeah. And I think I'm a mix of 5 and 9. I can't figure out which one I am.
5. Yep. I can see that.
So I don't know them like super well, but I know like when you get into that, people that like that stuff, it's kind of like the, the one with the disc profile, like people that love disc profile, that like they, everywhere they go, they're like, oh, that's a D.
That's a D. That's
You're a C. So you're a C. The Enneagram people are like that as well. Like,
so there's a dominant, and then there's a wing. So everybody's got a dominant number and then a wing onto that. So you may be a 5 with a 9 wing. I know I'm a dominant 3. My wife tells me I'm a dominant 3 with a, I think with a 9 wing. So, so I'm a similar, I've got a 9 wing when, and it's like when adversity or something like that, I tend to like retreat, you know?
Yeah.
And so like, not like retreat from the face of reality, but just kind of like want to kind of think to myself and like kind of problem solve to myself without kind of talking things out. But, it's interesting.
We should line that up for a few weeks out, so I have time to read one of the books. I've never like really studied it, but
it's fascinating.
It's certainly, it's big in the, it seems to be really big in like the, Christian church circle.
Yep.
I don't know who developed it or anything. I haven't really looked at it, but that's where I've heard the most about it. So yeah, that'd be good.
Okay.
So yeah. Talk about, you know, cause that's good to know about persuading each other and how you're persuaded and all that kind of stuff. So it definitely ties right in. So let me know, ask your wife about the best book.
Okay. We'll reach out to him.
We can get that book and see if we can get that author on the show. All right.
All right. Well, I think that's a wrap. Again, the book is that we've been talking about is Thinking Fast and Slow. It's one worth digging into, and you might want to get, what's the website again there, Sean, for the summary, if in case people want to know more about that?
Oh yeah, it's readitfor.me.
Okay.
So it's one of those weird websites that spells a sentence.
Yeah. We need to post that.
Or is it readitfor.me? I guess it's .me. Yeah. So readitfor.me. Yes.
Okay. Cool. Well, thanks again for listening. As always, you can find us over at Persuasion by the Pint, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.